or do we?
Did you get the outline? The outline?
Yeah, I got some more.
You can use mine if you want. Yeah.
I have one.
Yes, the outline. So that's basic. And then I'll do the roll call.
All right, good morning, everybody. Call the order of the February 22nd, 2019 open public meeting of the Arizona State Personnel Board is hereby called to order. I'm going to do a roll call, please. Robin, can you do the roll call?
Mark Ziska. Oh, maybe he doesn't.
Here.
And Mark appears to telephonically today. Joe Beers.
Here.
And Harmony DePort.
Here.
And Chad Kirkpatrick is not here yet.
I acknowledge that Robin, Van Sand, Board Staff, and Jeff Topple, Council of the Board, are in attendance.
Yes.
Today we have Attorney General Danae Caron from the Arizona Armed Weapons Citizens Aid Office to give us training on the open meeting law. Welcome, Mr. Caron, and thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me. Are we ready to get rolled?
Thanks.
So my name is Danny Rowe. I'm with the Arizona Ombudsman's Office. We are actually separate from the Attorney General's Office, just a point of clarification. So we're a legislative agency, so we're independent from the Attorney General's Office. Next slide, please. Just real quick, the...
It's not working. Where did it go?
The primary function of the Arizona Ombudsman's Office, just for anyone who's not familiar with us, is we're a small legislative agency. Typically what we do is investigate complaints about Arizona state agencies. That authority was expanded to cover open meeting and public records law for basically any public agency in the state. And part of our duty when it comes to those two subjects is to train and educate public officials and the public, which is why I'm here today. I apologize that I'm sitting down. Usually I have to stand up and move around when I hold my speed of the microphone. So,
how do you go back?
I apologize if it's weird to hear me lecturing from sitting down. Next slide, please. So before I jump into what the open meeting law is, I'll briefly talk about enforcement. Generally, there's a few ways in the state of Arizona to enforce the open meeting law. The primary enforcer is probably the Attorney General's Office. They have legal authority to take the public body as a whole to court or to investigate as a public body as a whole for open meeting law possible violations and to ultimately take it to court if they need to enforce the open meeting law. As of this past legislative session, the Attorney General's Office is now the only agency or entity in the state that can take an individual member to court to try to get that person fined or what have you for violating the open meeting law. Additionally, the county attorneys can do very similar things. They can take a public body to court, investigate complaints, and any member of the public who is affected by the open meeting law can take you to court to try to enforce the open meeting law. Our agency, the Ombudsman's Office, does not have enforcement authority, but we do have pretty broad investigative and public reporting authority. Next slide, please. So what is the open meeting law, just real quick? It's basically a set of laws to be transparent and open to government, to public accountability, government decision making. So the public, we ultimately work for the public, so the public gets to see what we do and how we do it when it comes to collective decision making. It's just 10 statutes in Title 38 of the Arizona Revised Statutes. If you're interested in reading it, probably take you about 15 minutes. Next slide, please. So who has to follow the open meeting law? Well, it's essentially multi-member decision-making entities for the government at all levels of the government. So all your boards, commissions, councils, those type of things would all have to follow the open meeting law. There are occasionally more difficult situations where whether you are a public body that is subject to the open meeting law can be a little ambiguous. It would be clear that the personnel board, for instance, is a public body subject to the open meeting law, but there are more difficult cases. And for that, as you'll see on the next slide, there's an attorney general's opinion that sort of gives you guidance on how to figure out those more tough in-between cases. But ultimately, the open meeting law applies to public bodies, and public bodies are basically multi-member decision-making entities that are governmental. Next slide, please. Definition of public bodies, which again are subject to the open meeting law, also includes standing, special advisory, and subcommittees. And as you'll see on the next slide, advisory and subcommittees are further defined basically as any committee that's established by the public body or by the presiding officer of the public body for the purpose of making recommendation. So in almost all situations, your committees, your public bodies committees, will then themselves be public bodies subject to the open meeting law. There can potentially be some exceptions to that, but the general rule is that most committees are going to be subject to the open meeting law. So whenever your committees are going to meet, they need to follow the open meeting law just like your main public body would. Next slide, please. And by the way, if you have any questions, feel free to ask them as we go. Common question that comes into our office is, I just got put on a new board or commission. I've never done this before. I heard about the open meeting law. Is there some sort of certification? Is there some sort of training I need to do? There's really not a lot as far as requirements for training or what have you in the open meeting law. All the open meeting law requires is that at least the day before you take office, you're supposed to review Attorney General's office approved open meeting law materials. And that usually just takes the form of materials provided by our office or materials provided by the Attorney General's office. And that's it. There's no test, there's no one who's gonna come quiz you on. So there's really no way of anyone actually knowing whether you've done this and enforcing it. But you should do it because it will prevent you from messing up the rest of this. But that's it, just review the materials the day before you take office. Next slide, please. This slide's probably the most important one to remember today. This really lays down the basic foundation of what is required at open meetings. And that is whenever your public body is going to meet, they need to provide notice, have an agenda, meet in public so the public can attend, take all legal action in public, and then create or prepare written minutes or recording of your meetings. I'll go into the details on all of these, but this is the main framework of what you must do as a public body. Next slide, please. Something to keep in mind, and something that's very important in figuring out when the open meeting law applies and in what ways, is the definition of meeting. Just in everyday parlance, we all have a general idea of what's meant by the word meeting, but of course the legislature has given it a legal meaning. So the term meeting is actually defined in the open meeting law as a gathering, either in person or through technological means, of a quorum of your public body to do any of those four things. Discuss, propose, deliberate, or take legal action. So it's basically two problems. One, you need a quorum of your public body, and two, you need to be essentially discussing or considering anything that could come before your public body for potential action. If you're missing one of those, you're probably not subject to the open meeting law. So if you don't have a quorum present, or if you're not discussing official business, you're probably not subject to the open meeting law. Next slide, please. This definition was changed last legislative session to include this new language. This language, although it is new, it really isn't new in effect. This language was basically laid out by the Attorney General's office years ago and pretty widely accepted as naturally flowing from the text of the open meeting law. And basically what it says is, if you have a one-way electronic communication by a member of your public body to a quorum of the rest in which you propose legal action, you're having a meeting subject to the open meeting law. And if you have a multi-member discussion or exchange or communication amongst the quorum through electronic means, you're having a meeting for open meeting law purposes. That's just in line with the definition of meet, the prior definition of meeting. And I'll go into that in a little detail here because it's probably somewhat confusing at this point without more context. Next slide, please. And just real quick, most people probably know what a quorum is, but in case you don't, it's usually the minimum number of people you need present to conduct business officially on behalf of your public body. You can't just have one of your members present to make decisions on behalf of a public body. What constitutes a quorum by default in Arizona is a simple majority. So if you have seven members, it's going to be four members constituting a quorum, and so on and so forth. Unless your public body has its own specific quorum requirements. Some public bodies, the quorum is higher or lower than a simple majority. Very common question that comes into our office is the quorum based on how many people are on your public body or how many seats there are? So for instance, if you can have five members but you currently only have four, what is the quorum based on, five or four? The Attorney General's office used to take the position that it was based on the amount of total seats. They didn't explain where they got this from. They just recently revised their open meeting law handbook, and this language mysteriously vanished without explanation. My guess again is that they didn't have a legal basis for it. So the long and short of it is there's really no specific answer to the open meeting law or really elsewhere in law, from what I can tell, that explains what you're supposed to base that quorum on. So my suggestion is to be conservative and base it on the total number of seats. So if you have 9 seats on your board, base it on 9 seats, not how many members you have actually appointed. Yes, that could potentially create problems for you if the governor just doesn't fill your seats or whoever else is in charge of filling them. But that's really more of a political or governmental issue than an open meeting law issue. Next slide, please. This is pretty widely accepted. I don't think it's really controversial, but I just feel like it's worth mentioning. You can obviously have an open meeting with members or all of your members meeting remotely or telephonically through other technological means. So I can recall the governorship meetings as gathering in person or through technological means, so you don't all need to be in the same room at the same time. Just what I recommend doing is explain who's attending remotely so that people who are in attendance know, because if that person doesn't talk, the public might not know. So I suggest putting that information out there publicly and in the agenda. Next slide, please. So the first major requirement of the open meeting law is what's known as an initial notice or disclosure statement or some mishmash of those words. You'll hear it referred to by a lot of different terms that sound similar. Basically, this is a permanently posted notice you have to have for your public body that says, here is where we will post all of our meeting notices going forward. For most public bodies in the state, including state public bodies like the personnel board, this needs to be permanently posted on your public body's website. So, for instance, the personnel board should have somewhere on their website that's easy to find a statement that says, here is where the personnel board will post all the notices for its public meetings going forward. And that's it. It can be as simple as that. You can change that over time if you'd like. It doesn't need to remain static for eternity, but you do need to have it posted at all times. There are a couple exceptions for public bodies that are for cities and towns and for special taxing districts. Cities and towns, instead of using their own website, can post it on the League or Association of Cities and Towns website, and special taxing districts alternatively can file that notice with the county clerk. Even to those public bodies, I usually recommend posting it online. Next slide, please. This is just what it could look like. This is, in my opinion, a little over the top and a little too legalistic looking. It comes from the Attorney General's office, but the Attorney General's provided this, so feel free to rip it off. Next slide, please. The second requirement is that for every public meeting your board is going to hold, you must provide notice for that meeting. That notice must be available to the public and to members of the public body at least 24 hours in advance. That 24-hour period can include Saturdays if all the places you post that notice are open to the public on Saturdays. So if you're going to post it in a post office that's closed on Saturdays, then Saturdays don't count. There are two exceptions to the 24-hour notice requirement, and I'll briefly touch on those in a couple of minutes. Next slide, please. So what do your notices have to have? They have to tell the public and the members which public body is meeting. So if it's the personnel board, well then it better indicate that it's the personnel board. The date, time, and place of the meeting. If you're in a great building, I highly, highly suggest putting a room number so that people can find it. And then it must also include an agenda or tell the public how they can get their hands on a copy of the agenda. I think it's probably most common for the notice and agenda to just be one document. So it starts off with who's meeting and when and where, and then it gets into the what's going to happen at the meeting. But you don't have to do it that way. Your notice can simply say something along the lines of go to this location or contact this person to obtain a copy of the agenda. Next slide, please. Very important. You must post your notices for each meeting at all the places you said you would in your disclosure statement. So if your disclosure statement on your website says, we will post all notices at this building and at this website, then you must post at that building and at that website for every meeting. If you do not, you are violating the open meeting law and all sorts of bad stuff might happen at that meeting. You must post your notices for each meeting on your website. There's another exception for special taxing districts, but for everyone else, so state public bodies like the personnel board must post each meeting notice on their website. A very common question that comes in is, do we have to post anywhere else? do we have to post in physical locations? The open meeting law doesn't specifically say. What it says is you must post on your website and you must give whatever other notice is reasonable and practicable. What does that mean? I really don't know. I think a lot of public bodies interpret that as meaning we should probably post at least one physical notice, maybe at the building that we usually meet in. I think that's a good safe practice, so I would suggest it. But the only specific posting you have to make is on your website. But again, if you promise more places in your disclosure statement, then you must place or post notices in those additional places. Next slide, please. Just one last sample of what the statute says. Next slide, please. And one more time. Thank you. Just a few mostly common sense tips on posting your notices. Try to make sure it can't easily be removed. If you just use a single piece of scotch tape on the outside of a burnt building, it's probably going to fall out and blow away. It's probably not going to cut it. If your notice has text on the front and back of the pages, don't put them in a glass case in which the public can't read the back. Something that's not required, but I really suggest it because it protects your public body, is get into a normal business practice of who posts and when. So try to have maybe your clerk or your director or whomever or a staff member routinely post the notices at as close to the same date and time as possible, because that shows a regular practice and it's good to provide evidence of how you normally do it in case you're challenged. And then whoever posts it, initial or sign it and date and time stamp it when you post it. It's not proof that you met the 24-hour notice posting requirement, but it is some evidence. So if someone challenges you, you can point to your normal routine and the fact it was signed and dated at the proper time and say, look, yeah, we did get it out of time. So it just protects you. Not required, but I suggest doing it. Next slide, please. So normally, again, you have to have 24 hours of notice between when you post your notice and when you have your meeting. However, there is a sort of exception to that. If you're at a proper meeting, such as the one we're at now, you can publicly announce that you're going to recess the meeting and resume it at a later time. And you don't have to post a new notice agenda and meet a new 24-hour clock. You can recess this meeting and tell everyone here you'll meet at the same place to pick up where you left off in 4 hours at whatever time. And then you should come back at that time and resume the meeting. And you wouldn't need to do anything else. That's helpful when the meetings are dragging on or something crazy happens and you need to take a break. Next slide, please. The other exception to the 24-hour requirement is if there's an actual emergency. This is going to be pretty rare, depending on your public body. I don't imagine the personnel board, for instance, has too many actual emergencies. But if you do have one, for instance, if you're the Flagstaff City Council and 4 feet of snow falls on your town, you need to take action immediately to avoid serious damage to property or human life, then you can declare that there's an emergency and hold an emergency meeting. So what happens in that situation? Next slide, please. Basically, you can hold your meeting. You need to follow all of the normal requirements except for the 24-hour notice requirement. So if there's an emergency and you only have 5 hours before the meeting, then give 5 hours of notice. Give as much notice as you can under the circumstances. Announce in public what the emergency is that's necessitating the emergency meeting. Include whatever those emergency reasons are in your minutes or your recording. And then after the fact, post a notice for anyone who might not have heard that your meeting did take place. And that notice should look like it normally would ahead of time, but it'll be after the fact to let people know who didn't know there was an emergency meeting. Next slide, please. Very, very common question, and I was talking a little bit about this with the director before the meeting. What if a bunch of us on the board are going to get together in a social setting? Do we need to post a notice? Does it need to be open to the public? Do we need an agenda? That depends. If you remember the definition of meeting, you need a quorum present, and you need to be essentially considering board business, something that can come before your board for potential action. So if there's going to be less than a quorum of you, you probably don't need to post a notice or an agenda. If there's going to be a quorum, but you're only going to talk about the weather, current events, what's going on in your kids' lives, then you're not going to need to post a notice. The open meeting law is not going to apply. But nevertheless, I still suggest, and I believe the Attorney General's office also suggests this, still posting what would be referred to as a courtesy notice or a courtesy agenda. Something that looks like a normal notice or a normal agenda that says something along the lines of a quorum of our public body may meet at this time in this location. This is a social event. No official business will be considered. This is being issued as a courtesy. You don't need to do that, but it cuts down on public suspicion should members of the public see you all gathered at some random event without having posted notice. But again, it really comes down to how many of you there are and what you're talking about. So if you do plan on having one of these social events where you don't think the open meeting laws are going to apply because you won't discuss official business, you then need to make sure you don't discuss official business. It's very easy to start talking about work. Once you do, you're probably violating the open meeting law, so be careful about that. Next slide, please. The third requirement is an agenda. So for every meeting, you must have an agenda. Just like the notice, it must be available at least 24 hours in advance to the members of the public body and the members of the public. It needs to basically have a roadmap for what's going to happen at your meeting. It needs to list specifically all the things you'll discuss, consider, or decide at your meeting. It must also include a reasonable level of detail. So the way I think of this is a general member of the public should be able to read your agenda, and it should be specific enough that they have an idea of what's going to happen at the meeting so they can decide whether they want to attend. If it's so vague that someone who doesn't work for your public body wouldn't understand what's going on, then it's probably not going to meet the open meeting law requirements. And then everything you do at your meeting, everything you talk about, everything you take action on, needs to be reasonably related to one of your agenda items. If it is not, you cannot discuss it, you cannot consider it, you cannot vote on it. Next slide, please. Some issues that sometimes pop up with agendas: using terms overly legalistic writing or acronyms that the public might not know. In government, we have all sorts of jargon and acronyms that a normal person on the street won't understand. Try to avoid using those on your agenda without defining them. If you know to spell out what they mean, that's great. If you don't, then it might not really be providing accurate or proper notice to the public. If the public doesn't know what all these acronyms that you're going to discuss mean, then they're not really getting notice. The same goes with overly vague terms like new business, old business. You can use those terms on your agenda, but you need to then explain what the new business is or what the old business is. If your agenda simply says things like new business, old business, without any further explanation, the public has no idea what you're going to be talking about. You're not successfully providing proper notice. Next slide, please. There's one sort of exception to that, and that is if one of your members is going to provide a brief summary of current events. You can basically list on your agenda something along the lines of the director will provide a brief summary of current events, and you don't need to list each individual current event they're going to mention. And that's provided that once that person provides that brief summary, there's no further discussion, no further action. If you want to discuss or act on any of those particular current events, they need to be their own individual agenda item. Can you bring up the rest of the slide, please? So it can be any member of the public body or the presiding officer or chief administrator. And basically, what this looks like in practice is maybe the director of your board would get up and say, don't forget the deadline for this thing, it is coming up on Friday, and don't forget that this happened, here's this other event coming up, the deadline for this is coming up, and then they sit back down and then there's no further discussion on those issues. It's basically just so you can briefly touch on things that need to be mentioned to the rest of the public body and the public. Next slide, please. Golden rule, one of the two or three golden rules of the open meeting law. If it's not on the agenda, do not talk about it. No matter how important it is, no matter how stupid you feel for forgetting to get it on the agenda, if it's not on the agenda, do not talk about it, do not vote on it. It will be an open meeting law violation. And if you vote on it, that vote is probably going to be null and void and cause you all sorts of problems down the line. Next slide, please. Can you bring up Rebecca, please? Thank you. So some issues that can come up with, there are some issues that can come up with where you meet. It's pretty straightforward when you're a government agency that meets in a government building like this. But when you're more local, sometimes you meet in more unorthodox locations. Or if you're going to have a peculiar or unique time of meeting. Basically, you need to make sure the public can get there. If it's going to be in a members-only club where you can't be admitted to the building unless you belong, that's probably not going to cut it because the public won't be able to be there. If it's a sort of room where no one can hear you speaking when you're holding your meeting, that's probably not going to cut it. If you know 20 people normally show up to your meetings and you decide to hold your meeting in a broom closet so that fewer people can show up, that's probably going to cause open meeting law problems. If you have meetings at 3 in the morning on a Sunday, that's probably going to cause open meeting law problems. So you just need to be reasonable about these things. Another common question that comes up, super common, It comes from both sides, from the government and the public. Public will say, what do I have a right to do at the meeting? Or the public body will say, what do we have to let the public do at the meetings? These are the only four things that the open meeting law specifically entitles you to do at meetings. The public gets to show up, they get to listen, and they get to record it. That's all the open meeting law entitles you to. Your public body, your statutes and rules might entitle the public to additional rights. For instance, your board, especially since you hear appeals about employment, might have certain situations where the public or certain individual members of the public are entitled to speak. And it just depends on your public body. But as a general rule, this is all the public has a right to do at your open meetings. Next slide, please. Generally, under the open meeting law, the public does not have a right to speak or a right to disrupt your meetings. You can give the right, the opportunity to speak, but you do not have to, generally. So if someone insists that they do have a right to participate in your meetings and they continue to try, I suggest making record, warnings on the record, and then eventually doing what you need to do to get them out if they just continue to disrupt your meetings. So if you're someone standing back there who just keeps shouting over you, eventually you can do what you need to do to get them out of there. Next slide, please. So you don't have to allow the public to speak, usually, but you can. You can give them the opportunity in what's known as an open call to the public. Most of you are probably familiar with this. If you haven't seen one in person or participated in one, you've probably at least heard of it or seen it on TV or in a movie. This is basically a segment of your meeting where you allow the public a certain amount of time to talk about whatever they want to within the realm of what your public body does. Can you bring up the rest, please? Yeah, you don't have to do these, but you can. And when I say you don't have to, that's from the legal perspective under the open meeting law. There might be something in your individual statutes that mandate this, or your public might just come to expect it. So politically, you might have to do it. If you think that you might get complaints and then the governor might call your board and say, why are you not doing these? Well, then maybe you have to be doing them. But that's more of a political matter than a legal matter. So if you do this, it needs to be on your agenda, just like everything else that happens at your meeting. And you can subject the people who wish to speak to reasonable time, manner, and place restrictions. If that sounds familiar to you, it's probably because that's the term, one of the terms the Supreme Court usually uses when talking about First Amendment law. And the big takeaway from that is just be reasonable and treat everyone the same. Don't give people you like more time, and don't tell people who have certain opinions that they're not allowed to voice them. Once you start discriminating about what people are going to say, you're going to run into First Amendment trouble. The Attorney General's Office, based on other states' court decisions, thinks you can ban write petitions. So if you think 100 people are basically going to say the same thing on an issue, you can basically narrow it down to nominating a certain amount of people to speak on behalf of a certain viewpoint or the first five people or something like that. As far as I know, that's never been addressed in Arizona law, so it's a little risky to do that, but you would have some cover from the Attorney General's office. Next slide, please. Some common issues that come up with calls to the public is discussing things that are not on the agenda. At the open call of the public can basically talk about whatever they want, as long as it comes within what your board does, regardless of whether it's on the agenda. You, as board members, however, are still limited to only discussing or considering items that are on your agenda. So what happens if a member of the public brings up something not on the agenda? What can you do? Well, you can ask your staff to study it, the issue. You can ask it to be placed on a future agenda. Or if it was criticism involved, as a single person, respond to the criticism. You cannot discuss it. You cannot take action on it. So if you wish to discuss it, it needs to be on the agenda already. If it's not, you must wait until a future meeting to bring it up amongst your board members. So sometimes members of the public will say, well, why aren't you going to talk about this? Why aren't you going to start responding about it? You're not even allowed to. So you can tell them we're not allowed to under the open meeting law. Perhaps we'll put this on a future agenda. Next slide, please. Some things to probably avoid. Sometimes there'll be violations. Sometimes they'll just look like violations and maybe cause you trouble you don't want to deal with. If your board is up here and somebody's presenting or one of your board members is speaking, try to avoid discussing things amongst the rest of your members. If you're passing notes or texting or looking at your phones and dealing to each other, if you're talking about board business, you might be violating the open meeting law because the public can't hear that discussion. If you're just sending funny cat pictures back and forth and deciding where to go for lunch, it just looks bad and it's going to just cause you trouble. People are going to wonder, what are they talking about? Why can't I hear it? So I suggest avoiding passing notes and whispering back and forth in meetings when you can avoid it. Somewhat more likely to happen, depending on what kind of polar body you are, is talking amongst yourselves, amongst the quorum, before or after a meeting. If your meeting says it's going to start at 10 a.m., and a bunch of you bump into each other on the way into the building at 9:30, if you start discussing board of business and there's a quorum present, you're violating the open meeting law. So an easy way for that to come up is even after a meeting. A constituent, a member of the public, follows one of you out and starts discussing something with you, one member, that's fine. You can discuss things all day long with constituents. But then if the rest of the board hears it, thinks it's interesting, and comes and joins in on the discussion, then all of a sudden you're having a meeting that's not that didn't have proper notice, it didn't have a proper agenda, and violating the open meeting law. So you need to be careful about situations where a quorum of your board might suddenly congregate and start discussing things. And it's very easy to happen just before and just after a proper meeting. Next slide, please. So I just gave you, 30 minutes of how you need to be transparent and open. And now I'm going to tell you about the situations where you don't have to be transparent and open. These are known as executive sessions. There's seven specific types of situations where you can meet essentially out of the public eye to discuss things. And those are called executive sessions. They're laid out in the statute up there, AOS 38-431.03. And the seven varieties of executive session are laid out in A1 through A7. If you're going to have one of these, you need to exclude the public. You do not even have the option. Once you decide you're having an executive session, the public is not allowed to be there. If you're going to have one of these, you must include it on your notice and agenda. You must publicly vote to go into executive session. So you get to have the executive session in private, but the vote to go into it must occur in public at a proper meeting. Everything said in executive session is confidential. You have no choice. You may not discuss it with the public at any point after the fact. It must remain confidential. You cannot take legal action. 99.9% of the time you're deciding or voting on something in executive sessions, you're violating the open meeting law. You can discuss things in executive session, but if you want to then act on them, you must go back out into the public and take a public vote on whatever it is. And then last, even though it's confidential, you must have written minutes or recording for your executive sessions. It won't be available to most people, but some people will have access to those things, and I'll tell you about that in a few minutes. Next slide, please.
So would it lose if in the executive session you do something or there's a post discussion of it? Does it lose its confidential nature?
I don't think so. There's nothing in the open meeting law that makes it sound like an executive session ever loses its confidential nature.
Yeah, like a privilege, for example.
Right.
Yeah.
I even hesitate to say it's a privilege because usually with a privilege you have the option. Right. In this case, you can potentially get in trouble for ever discussing this with most people. There's certain people you can discuss it with, and I'll get into that. But no, I don't think there's anything that magically dissolves the confidentiality.
Okay.
No. Something to keep in mind, there will be situations where you can have an executive session, but you don't have to. So the option is yours. And something to keep in mind, again, is there might be public suspicion. If you have members of the public that show up to your meeting and then they watch you go into another room to secretly discuss something, they might be suspicious as to what's happening. Is bearing that suspicion worth whatever the benefit is that you're getting by going into executive session? That's something to consider, I think, every time you go into executive session. A lot of executive session discussions can be had in public with no legal issue. Next slide, please. Your notice must include, for executive sessions, the specific statutory provision that authorizes that type of executive session. So the statute has seven subsections that list the seven types. You must indicate exactly which one applies for that executive session. Your agenda must also include a general description of whatever you're going to discuss or consider in an executive session. It doesn't need to be as specific as it normally is for your public agenda or the agenda for the public portion of your meeting, but it still needs to be more than simply citing the statute and being really vague about it. So one of the reasons you can go into executive session is for legal advice. If your agenda says we're going to go into legal advice pursuant to this section of the statute, that's not going to be good enough. You need a little more. What are you getting legal advice about? Just a little more. I'd like to say that there is some sort of black and white formula for deciding how specific you need to be, but there isn't. You just have to use your best judgment. Be as specific as you can without defeating the point of having the executive session. Next slide, please. Who gets to show up at executive sessions? Can you bring out the rest, please? All the members of the public body get to be there. So all the members of the board or the committee or what have you get to be there. If you're having a personnel discussion, which is one of the reasons to have an executive session, you can allow that person to be there. There's nothing in the executive in the opening law that says you must let that person be there. The auditor general can be there in connection with a relevant audit. And then last, anyone whose presence is reasonably necessary to carry out the point of the executive session. So if you're getting legal advice, well, obviously your attorney can be there. If your clerk or your staff is taking minutes or doing the recording, they can be there, things like that. Your friend Bob down the street wants to be there because he's never seen how it works, that's not going to cut it. They need to have a good reason to be there. I highly, highly, highly suggest explaining in your minutes and recording, and probably also your agenda, unusual people who are going to be there and why they're going to be there. So basically, anybody besides your attorney and the board, I would probably suggest writing down and saying staff member so-and-so will be there for the purpose of taking minutes, something like that. Or if you're taking testimony from someone, put that person's name down and then they're providing testimony, something like that. Next slide, please. Some issues to avoid an executive session. Can you reveal the rest of the slide, please? Do not talk about what happened in an executive session outside of the executive session. Basically, once you come out of that room, you're really not supposed to talk about it. Your chair is actually legally required by the Open Meeting Law to remind your public body every time you have one of these that it's confidential and do not talk about it. Next slide, please. Oh, one more. Do not take legal action. I've already mentioned this, but it bears repeating. If you find yourself making a decision as a board or voting in an executive session, you're almost certainly violating the Open Meeting Law. Your votes must take place in public. Next slide, please. So the first type of executive session is to discuss personnel matters. You can hold an executive session to discuss the employment, firing, hiring, assignment, dismissal, raises, demotions, discipline, what have you, of your employees, people who basically answer to the board ultimately. It needs to be a specifically identifiable individual. So say you're the board of a school district. You have 1,000 teachers in your school district. If you're discussing whether to give all of them a 5% raise, that's not something you can do in executive session. It needs to be individually identifiable people. So someone you're considering firing, or a couple individuals you're considering giving raises to. That type of thing. Next slide, please. These type of executive sessions have some extra unique requirements. Not only do you have to do your normal 24 hours notice for the executive session and with the agenda, but you also need to give that person, that personnel member that you're going to discuss in the executive session, 24 hours of separate written notice that you might discuss them in the executive session. They then have the ability to require that that discussion, if it occur in public. They can basically veto the executive session discussion and require that you say what you need to say about them in front of the public and themselves. Again, the employee does not necessarily have a right to be in the executive session, but there's nothing prohibiting you from allowing them to attend. So it's sort of discretionary. But if you say the person can't attend the executive session, they can then invoke their ability to require that discussion happen in public. So one way or another, if they're willing, they get to hear what you have to say. And then just something to keep in mind, I'll mention at the end in a few minutes, but if you discuss an employee in the executive session, that person will get to see the minutes or the recording of the portion of the executive session that had to do with them. Next slide, please. A couple questions related to this that the Attorney General has waited on in formal opinions over the years. First, can you do personnel evaluations in executive session? The Attorney General thinks you can. Can you interview applicants for job openings in executive session? The Attorney General thinks you can. I think those are both probably right. But even if you discuss hiring someone in executive session, the formal decision must occur in public with a public vote. You don't get to make the decision in executive session. Next slide, please. Second reason to go into executive session is when you have confidential information. I imagine this comes up pretty regularly for the person on the board. If there's information that you need to discuss that is made confidential by state or federal law, and you would be violating the law to discuss that in public, then you can go into executive session to discuss it. If you have HIPAA protected health information, FERPA protected education information, or anything else, perhaps certain employment information that may be made confidential, you can do that in executive session. Next slide, please. The third, and in my opinion, probably the most common reason to go into executive session is to get legal advice. In the United States, we have what's known as attorney-client privilege, basically where anything said between a client and an attorney in the course of obtaining legal advice is protected from disclosure. And in order to maintain that privilege, you can get your legal advice in executive session. That way, the public doesn't get to hear it, and it doesn't destroy your attorney-client privilege. How does this work? You go into executive session with your attorney, you tell the attorney what you need to do or what they need to know about the situation, you ask your questions, they can then provide legal counsel to you. Once you get to the point where you want to decide what to do with that legal advice, that's a discussion that needs to happen either in public or in another legitimate type of executive session. You don't get to do it in your legal advice executive sessions. The only thing that happens in these type of executive sessions is the conversation necessary to obtain the legal advice. Next slide, please. Oh, yes, sir.
And are those on the record as well? Did it be recorded? Or is that where?
You need to either have written minutes or a recording for those executive sessions.
Even of the legal advice?
Yes,
portion.
But they don't have to be super specific.
Okay.
The minutes and recordings for executive sessions are pretty vague, or at least they can be. So you can basically, it's in like three slides if you don't
okay.
Know,
no, right. No, that's great. Thank you.
Next slide, please. And just real quick, the four more slightly less common reasons you can go into executive session. You can go into executive session to discuss and consult with your attorneys about litigation, contract negotiations, and settlements. This is one of two or three types of executive sessions where you can sort of come to a limited decision because you get to instruct your attorney about your negotiating position, basically. You can sort of informally instruct the attorney what to do or decide what to instruct the attorney what to do in the executive session. But I still recommend going out in the public and taking a public vote, basically where the public will say, we agree, or we're voting on issuing the instructions to the attorney that we discussed in the executive session. It's going to be a vague vote, but I still suggest taking the vote in public. Another reason you can go to the executive session, basically if you're negotiating with an employee organization about salary. So basically, if you're negotiating with a union about salary, you can talk about your negotiating position in executive session. If you're negotiating with another nation, state, or tribe, you can talk about your negotiating position in executive session. And then the same thing about you can discuss with your representatives in executive session your negotiating position about the purchase, sale, or lease of real property. And again, in that situation, you can instruct your representatives about your public body's negotiating position. It's very limited. You don't get to make a decision about whether to buy, lease, or sell. You just get to sort of come to an agreement amongst each other and with your representative about your negotiating position. The formal decision to actually do any of those things, to buy, sell, or lease, must occur in public. Next slide, please. Last major requirement are minutes or recording. Every public meeting must have minutes or recording. Sometimes people will make an audio recording initially and then use that to make written minutes. Just a quick record-keeping issue on that. If you're going to do that, you're going to make a recording for the purpose of then making written minutes. You don't get to destroy that recording the second you're done with it. You must hold on to it for another 3 months after you make the recording. Just an FYI for your records people. Next slide, please. What do your minutes have to have? Pretty straightforward. Which public body met? Where and when did you meet? Which of your members were there? Which weren't? A general description of everything you talked about. An accurate description of all the legal actions proposed and taken. A new requirement as of this last legislative session, you need a record of how each particular member voted. So for every time you vote, your minutes or your recording must indicate how each member voted. You need to have the name of each member who proposes each motion, the name as given to whoever presents to the board, and then a note about whatever agenda item they're presenting about. Next slide, please.
I have a question.
Yes, ma'am.
This last January, there was a bill passed that we have to record and the recording of minutes to our website. Does it subsidize the minutes?
Who, what public body is this?
Actually, there was a bill passed that January 1st of this year, 2019, we have to...
That was just passed? Like a month ago?
No, actually, it was passed last year, but it was effective January 2019.
That all public bodies have to record?
Yes, they have to have recording on their website. So, yeah.
I'm not familiar with that. I would love to see
oh,
whatever
really?
Bill. Yes, I have no idea what bill you're talking about, because there was a bill that I am familiar with that did not pass. That would have mandated recordings. So if you can show me that, I'd love
sure,
to see
I,
it.
I would love to. Actually, the videotape did not pass. The recording of the voice passed.
Okay. Well, again, I'd love if you can.
So if it's that case, which passed, you know, we all know that. I'm the executive director of One Board, so I would know that. If it's that the case, the fact, does it subsidize the minutes?
It depends on which statute it amended. I'd have to read it. If it amended the statute that requires written minutes so that it no longer does, then yes, it would get rid of that requirement. But if it's in addition to written minutes, then you would still need to do it. I don't know. I'd have to read it to give you an answer. I left my business card over there, so if you would be so kind as to let me know either after or whenever you can, I would really appreciate that. Thank you. So what about access to the minutes? Very common question. When do we have to make the minutes available? Do we have to make them available? The answer is yes, and you have 3 working days after the meeting, after which you must provide written minutes to whoever wants to see them, unless I'm mistaken about how the law has been amended. So basically, if your meeting was Monday at 10 a.m., by Thursday at 10 a.m., if someone knocks on the door and says, let me see your minutes of recording, you need to make those available. And they need to have all that stuff I had on the previous slide. You don't get to make them wait until you've approved those minutes where you've approved that recording. Cities and towns over a certain population, 2,500, have additional posting requirements. This only applies to public bodies for cities and towns. So it doesn't apply to the personnel board, but just FYI, they also, in addition to the minutes and recordings, must post on their website either a recording or a summary of the legal actions taken at the meeting within 3 working days. And then once they approve the minutes or recording, they need to post that within 2 working days. All that needs to stay on the website for at least a year. Next slide, please. Same thing applies to subcommittees and advisory committees for cities and towns over a certain population, except for the committees, you have 4 days to get them online. Next slide, please. So executive session minutes, we were just talking about this. You must have them. You must either have minutes or recording. They need to include the date, time, place, who was there, who wasn't, a general description of what you considered, an accurate description of all instructions given. So, if you instruct your attorney representative to go negotiate to a certain point, you need to accurately describe that. And then whatever else you need, you think is appropriate. So really, when it comes to the legal advice, you just need a general description of the matter considered. So basically, I think you can probably get away with, we obtained legal advice from our counsel on this issue. I don't think you need to explain exactly what you asked or exactly what the attorney said to you. Yes?
Yeah, I have a question. I can see that it's required to keep the minutes in order to prove that there. But it shall be kept confidential. So why do we have to keep it if we can't even disclose it?
If you can wait 30 seconds, I will tell you on the next slide.
Perfect.
Next slide, please. So those minutes do need to be kept confidential, except you can provide them to members of the public body. So if 3 weeks later you want to remember what you discussed in the executive session, you can go look at the minutes of the recording. If you're an employee who has discussed in the executive session, you get to see those minutes of that recording. The Auditor General can see them in connection with an audit. And then investigatory agencies that are investigating possible open law violations can see them as well. And that's really it. So you don't get to give them to the public. You don't get to give them to the media. Just these certain entities, and some of that only applies in certain situations. That is the whole reason, really, that we're keeping those. So the members of the public body can see what happened in the past, and then there can be oversight by the courts and investigative agencies. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Thanks. Slide, please. If you ever find that you were trying to be super clever and sneaky and getting around the open meeting law, there's a good chance you're violating the open meeting law. Can you reveal the whole slide, please? You can't use any devices to get around it. If you meet remotely or through some sort of technological means, you could be having a meeting subject to the open meeting law. You can't splinter a forum to get around the open meeting law. What does that mean? Basically, serial communications, like a game of telephone. One member emails another member, then they email their conversation to the next member and gets to a forum. You've probably violated the open meeting law. That's a meeting, even though it didn't happen at the same time. There's no need for simultaneous communication to trigger the open meeting law. Don't poll each other on how you plan on voting at the next meeting. If you send an email to the rest of your board and say, hey, how are you thinking of deciding that vote? And then they reply all, you probably violated the open meeting law. Next slide, please. Again, it doesn't matter if it's nonverbal. If there's any medium that you can, in which you can communicate human thought, you can use that to violate the open meeting law. So phonograph records, emails, smoke signals, play tablets, it doesn't matter. If you can communicate to another person, you can use it to violate the open meeting law. Next slide, please. There's now a somewhat old Attorney General's opinion where the Attorney General said you can't use email to violate the open meeting law. This is not controversial. Next slide, please. Again, electronic communication is basically the same thing for open meeting law purposes as in-person verbal communication. So watch what you do through Snapchat, Instagram, direct messages on Twitter, and things like that. Next slide, please. And I'll just give you a few examples. Imagine you have a 5-member board, so your quorum is 3. One member sends an email to at least 2 of the other members, so it's reached a quorum, and then someone hits reply all amongst that quorum. That's been a multi-way communication amongst a quorum of your public body. You probably violated the open meeting law. Next slide, please. Does it matter if you're having that multi-member or that quorum discussion and it's facts versus opinion? Probably not. If you have a quorum deliberating, you're having a meeting. And according to the Attorney General's office, you know, in the dictionary, deliberation, the definition includes the collective acquisition of facts. So if I'm on a board and I email the whole board some facts about something and then someone hits reply all and sends me some different facts back and forth, we're probably having a meeting subject to the open meeting law. Next slide, please. One more time, thank you. Might be worth putting something like this on the bottom or the signature of your emails. It's not required, but it might help you to remind you in a pinch that, oh yeah, we need to be careful about what we say. A little disclaimer about the open meeting law. Next slide, please. Your staff can send emails and communications to you without violating the open meeting law. Passively receiving information from staff without more does not lead to an open meeting law violation. So that's how you send out materials to your board members about what to read in preparation for the meeting, so you're not ignorantly discussing a topic, and how you send out emails about when your meetings will be, and so on and so forth. What were you running into troubles when you then start discussing those issues amongst each other? So I mentioned this earlier, this is now in the definition of meeting. It didn't used to be, but we all sort of treated it as part of the law nonetheless. Usually, to violate the open meeting law, you need to have discussion amongst a quorum, and that discussion needs to be multi-way. So what does that mean? That means if I am on a board and I email the rest of the board and say, here's my opinion on this general issue that we're going to be discussing. If nobody else responds, we probably don't violate the open meeting law because there was no multi-way communication. One person can't deliberate or discuss something. However, the one exception to that is when you're proposing legal action. If you propose legal action amongst the quorum, it's a violation and it only takes one person. So if I email the rest of my board and say, here's what I want us to vote to do in the next meeting, even if no one responds, I've probably violated the open meeting law. You cannot propose legal action outside of a meeting. Next slide, please. So then how do you propose an agenda item without violating the open meeting law? The key is really to propose a general topic for consideration and possible action, and not actually communicate the specific action you want taken. What does that mean in practice? I'll give you some examples. Next slide, please. Imagine you're on a city council. you email the rest of your council, we should discuss safety at First Street and Main Street. That would be okay. I wouldn't suggest doing that because it would be really easy to turn that into a violation by having people reply to you. But that in itself is okay. You're not proposing a specific legal action. And that, next example, please.
Oops, sorry.
No problem. Now, contrast that one with the second example. Imagine you email your whole council and say, I think we should install a crosswalk at First Street and Main Street. That would be a violation. That is legal action. You are proposing that your public body essentially vote to spend money on installing a crosswalk. It's more than just a topic for consideration. That would be a violation of the open meeting law, if that was done amongst the quorum of your public body. Next slide, please. Here's another similar example. Imagine your board, one of your members emails the rest of the board and says, I think we should consider firing one of your employees at the next meeting. That would probably be a violation of the open meeting law. Your proposed specific action that your public body would need to take in a public meeting. And contrast that with the second one. Instead of saying you want to fire them, you say, I want to discuss that person's performance. That's more general. It doesn't include a specific legal action. Therefore, you would not be violating the open meeting law. Next slide, please. And I'll give you one more. You send an email to the rest of your board saying we should implement a program just like the one I've attached to this email. That's probably violating the open meeting law because you're suggesting the implementation of a program. You're really proposing legal action. Next example, please. Now imagine you just send an article to the rest of your board with no comments. You're not suggesting you implement anything. That's probably okay. Again, I still wouldn't do it because if you're really getting close to a violation, it would be easy for somebody to hit reply and to have an improper discussion. But that in and of itself probably is not a violation. Next slide, please. Can you just skip ahead one more? You can't direct your staff to violate the open meeting law. So board members, don't ask your director to do things that you're not allowed to do. She will get in trouble and you will get in trouble as well. Anyone who knowingly aids or agrees to aid someone in violating or attempting to violate the open meeting law is them in a they themselves are violating the open meeting law. Next slide, please. There's an interesting little public communication exception in the open meeting law. Basically, you members of the public body are entitled to express your opinions in public when you know it will probably be disseminated through public media, even though you know the rest of your public body is going to hear it. So usually, you can't share your opinions with the rest of your public body unless it's in a meeting. But in this limited situation, you can do so. So the situation I always think is, Phoenix City Council is leaving after a contentious meeting. One of the members is going down the stairs. The Republic or Channel 12 sticks a microphone in one of the members' faces and says, how are you going to vote at the next meeting and why? You can answer that question even though you know the rest of your members are going to hear that. Because the legislature has made an exception for it. And if you look at the next slide, that's okay as long as you're not doing it deliberately to get around the open meeting law. What does that mean? I guess if you email your board members ahead of time and say, hey, look at the back page of the Ahwatukee Foothills News. I got a friend who's going to put what I want you to hear on the back page when no one will see it. If the AG got a hold of that communication, that would probably be a violation of the open meeting law, but at that point you probably know that because it feels sneaky. Next slide, please. When in doubt, always err on the side of openness and transparency. The final part of the open meeting law says whoever is charged with interpreting it should interpret it in favor of openness, which most people, including the Attorney General's office, interprets as basically, when in doubt, we err on the side of openness. And the AG likes to exploit that to some degree. So if it's a tough gray area, the AG will sometimes say, well, you're violating the spirit of the open meeting law, and they'll point to that statute to say, you should have erred on the side of openness. And just, I mentioned earlier, FYI, any legal action taken in violation of the open meeting law can very well be rendered null and void by a court, and then you'll have to go through a convoluted ratification process to fix it. Next slide, please. So what do you do if you think you violated the open meeting law? If you're in the middle of a meeting, you might want to just recess it and figure out what to do. So if you realize 10 minutes into the meeting that you forgot to post notice in an agenda, you're probably going to want to just cancel that meeting because there's nothing you can do to fix it at that point. However, if someone just went off the agenda for a minute talking about something that wasn't on it, you can steer that person back on track and keep the meeting going. That's not going to last the whole meeting. The courts and the AG have basically said one violation doesn't necessarily wreck the whole meeting. It depends on the severity of it and basically on the facts of the situation. So again, if you forget to open the building and let the public in, or you don't post a notice, that's probably going to ruin everything. If you vote on something that's not on the agenda, that vote is probably going to be ruined. If someone just starts talking about something that's not on the agenda, that's not going to ruin the whole rest of the meeting. It really depends. But it's pretty straightforward. Next slide, please. So maybe you violated the open meeting law and you realize this after the fact, or it's after the fact and you try to figure out what to do with it. Determine if you need to ratify it. Did you take a legal action that is now questionable? Did you vote on something that wasn't on the agenda? Did you vote on something only to realize you forgot to publish a notice and an agenda? Well, then get with your attorney and figure out if you need to ratify it. Get everyone on the same page about what went wrong and why it was wrong so that it doesn't happen again. If someone complains, I suggest being open about what happened and what you're doing to fix it. Next slide, please. So what if you did take one of those votes that's now probably null and void? You can ratify it. This is a process outlined in the open meeting law that basically lets you retroactively fix something that is affected by an open meeting law violation. So if you figure out you messed up, you can ratify within 30 days after you figured it out or when you should have reasonably figured it out. Next slide, please. What do you have to do? Well, you need to do it. You need to ratify it at a public meeting. And for that public meeting, you need to give 72 hours of notice. You need to provide a written description of what you're ratifying and that you're ratifying it. Basically, you need to be very clear about what you're doing, what happened, and why you're doing what you're doing to fix it. There needs to be information as to how the public can get a written description of what you're ratifying and why. And that written description needs to include the vote that you're ratifying, the deliberations, consultations, and decisions that led up to that improper vote, and all that stuff needs to be included in the minutes as well. It's sort of a pain to do, so if you ever get into the situation, I really, really, really suggest getting your attorney on board so that you make sure you don't mess it up further, because if you then screw up the ratification, you've then magnified the problem. Next slide, please. What happens to you if you violate the open meeting law? It used to be that if you violated the open meeting law, you could be on the hook for up to $500 for every violation. Last year, the legislature changed it. Now you, as an individual, can be on the hook for seemingly nothing for the first violation, but up to $500 for the second, and up to $2,500 for every violation from that point on. But in order to violate the open meeting law to where you can get fined, you need to knowingly violate the open meeting law. If you make an innocent mistake, you're probably going to be okay. Usually, the only way this happens is when you are really, really, really having a negligent, reckless disregard of the open meeting law, or you're doing it intentionally. We're all going to make simple mistakes from time to time. It happens. Every public body messes up from now and again. The key is to learn from it and take reasonable precautions to avoid it. I mentioned earlier, the only way you can be taken to court individually to pay any of these fines is if the Attorney General takes you. It used to be that anyone could take you to court, basically. Now it's only the Attorney General can do this to you individually. Unless you have something in law that enables your public body to reimburse you, if you get penalized, you're going to be on the hook in your own private capacity for that fine. So you're probably not going to get reimbursed by your public body. There's a sort of defense to this. If you realize your public body is probably violating the open meeting law, you can object on the record, and then if you get taken to court, you can use that as a defense, that objection, and hopefully the judge will look at that and say, okay, I'm not going to fine you. But again, it's super, super rare that you will even get taken to court and even get close to getting penalized. Usually when the AG calls you up, they tell you we're investigating, they then make a finding, and then they tell you, here's what you did wrong, agree that you did it wrong, get some training, and don't do it again. That's the worst case scenario 99% of the time. Next slide, please. If a court finds that you knowingly violated the open meeting law with the intent to deprive the public of information, so basically you were trying to cover stuff up, a court can remove you from office and you can be charged, basically criminally charged. So I really, really suggest not doing that. Next slide. This is the bill I was alluding to earlier. There was a bill in the last legislative session that maybe I misread how this bill went, but this bill would have amended the open meeting law to require that all public bodies create video recordings of their meetings. They would need to be posted on their website and kept up there for five years.
Yeah,
I believe it failed. I would go back and check. I will go back and check after this meeting, but 99.9% chance sure this bill did not pass. We'll see. I'll verify it. But this is what I've been telling everyone for the last year, so I hope it did not pass. It originally didn't get close to passing in the House. Then it was amended that it wouldn't apply to certain public bodies. Then it failed in the House, I think, by two votes. If I'm recalling it correctly, they held it open, the vote open, for a long time on the floor, seeing if it would tip in favor, but it didn't. But maybe I remember it wrong. Next slide. And this is it. If you have any questions, I left my business cards out on the table. Feel free to email or call me if you ever have an interesting open meeting law issue pop up or public records. On our website, we have a whole bunch of materials, including electronic versions of our open meeting law handbook and just links to other resources. I also put out some of our open meeting and public records law handbooks on the table. They have all the relevant statutes. They have the Attorney General's handbook sections on the public records and open meeting law and then other valuable information. That's like 95 to 99% of what you'll ever need to look at for your typical open meeting law issue. And with that, if there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. Otherwise, thank you for listening tonight.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Jerome?
I just want to say thank you. I thought that was incredibly helpful.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you. I move we adjourn. Is there a second?
The only thing I think we should note is Chad's arrival.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
So for the record.
Chad Kirkpatrick, for the record, is now in attendance. Once again, I move we adjourn.
Do we adjourn before an executive session?
I think we got to vote on to move to the executive session.
Yes. Okay. I thought that was a given. All right, I have a motion to move to executive session.
Motion. So I move that Chad Kirkpatrick, I move we move to an executive session.
Second that.
Do we have to do a roll call vote? Or?
Roll call? Okay. So Mark Ziska?
Yeah.
He's on telephonic today. Joe Beers?
Yes.
Harmony Duport?
Yes.
Chad Kirkpatrick?
Yes.
Okay, motion carries. We will go to executive session and I move to adjourn the public session.
I'm going to take a quick bio break.
Are we good? Are we good? Counselor, are we good?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we going to stay here?
How did you turn yourself?
Please just turn yourself to a donut. It just clicked.
There you go. I didn't hold it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Do you work for the Attorney General or for the board?
For the board.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Nice to meet you.
No, I appreciate that. That was great.
And he's new.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's been really a few months.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember what month it was.
Whenever I do one of these and the attorneys are there, I'm like, if they've been doing this for 30 years, I'm probably rolling their eyes.
I should have asked before, give me the pronunciation of your name.
Yeah.
Danny.
Okay.
It looks weird, but it sounds normal.
Gotcha. Okay.
I'm going to run to the
And Garone is the last name?
Yes. Okay. You have the last name. No problem.